I mean, there's a briefing on a variety of issues. Whether we should not put small-scale fisheries policy after the squid rights movement, so that we can quickly get briefings on an update on the interim relief measures, aquaculture development zones, Kuga municipality. I'm sure we can, squid rights movement, we can handle them more quickly. And then, Chair, what I would like to suggest is that you perhaps give some strict time frames in cooperation with the presenters, that they tell us how long will they take on each issue, so that we can manage our time, because we've got to be out here by, I think, 12:15.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was also thinking about a rather important aspect, and that is the MPAs, the Marine Protected Areas. There is, I know it's under control of DEA, but if fishing or harvesting is going to be allowed in that. I think it's a long way off, because there's also the constitution about, you know, protecting biodiversity and so forth. But if we could be allowed to ask a few questions on that, I would like to include that in the agenda. Thank you.
Did you say marine protected area?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Welcome the DG and the department and everybody present here this morning. As we can see, we are rushing now because of the time factor. But I would like to ask to be just straight to the point and try and economize time, even during the question time. And with the apologies, the chairperson is out of the country, Mr. Lulu, Honorable Lulu Johnson. Another apology is Mr. Chitello, Mr. Gaila, and
the
Mr. Victoria.
Mr. Bosman's also overseas.
Yes.
China.
Mama Mabuza also is attending environmental affairs. Those are the apologies. So I hope you do accept them. Now, coming to the briefing by the department of agriculture, forest and fisheries, I had a consultation with the DDG, would put to this meeting that let's start with the update as number one, so that we have this background, because the aim of this meeting is for us to come and understand fisheries, everything and everything. Where are we at the moment? Because we know that part of the fisheries was given to the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. And there was a remaining sector that was in the other department. So where are we now? And what is the impact of this split presently in the department? So if we can have the background of where are we, and then we get the update on this interim relief measure, and number two, small-scale fisheries, Number three, it will be the aqua development zone. The aqua development zones, I don't know whether they do include the marine protected. No.
They would indeed be a separate
discussion. So we can add the marine protected areas number last. Because, Honorable Abraham, the Kufa municipality information and the squid rights movement are part of the presentation. I don't know whether we can separate them, squid as a request.
Yeah, I should say that the squid we can handle it. But my only worry was that if you go into the squid without having understood the background on the right allocation, because we want to brief the portfolio committee as to what actually happened during the right allocation, how many applications were made, how many were declined, because all those people are the people at the moment who are actually making a lot of noise out there, requiring that they be considered, including the interim relief, how it came about. Because talking to the small scale fisheries policy, it was set as a result of a lot of other activities that happened. So we want to give a background to all those activities that resulted into the situation where we are now, from the official perspective. Then after that, when we deal with the SMIT, it will be one of the sectors. But it's important we tell you about all the sectors. Then when we go to the speed, it's just one bit of the sector. But once we start with it and we come back and tell you about all the other 22, we would lose the logic of the presentation.
Chairperson, so can we now understand now what is the agenda now? Is it now a update on interim relief measures that comes first? So that would be number one then. Number 3-1. And then next, aquaculture development zone. Is that how I understand it?
The next one is
small-scale fisheries will be number two.
Right.
Okay. And then I suppose the rest will be 3, 4, 5, and what Mr. Dutoy has suggested will be 6. Okay. Fine, Chair. Chair, can I ask in the interest of time management, how long is the first presentation going to be so that we know how we manage our time here, person? I think that's very important.
There's no
panel song.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Chairperson, I would suggest that it's small scale difference and on the agenda. Update on interim relief. Aquaculture is not a business that our people are currently. It's not the plight currently. So we would like the immediate thing as the Kuha municipality to shift to where aquaculture is, because we don't want to be delayed. We want the immediate issue. We do not want to be delayed with issues that are long term and not immediate effect on job creation and on our people's hunger. Stomachs. We want those things that are going to feed our people now in the interim, while the long-term plans are being made in the department. So we want immediate information. People are every week in our offices, so we don't have answers for them, and we want to go out of this meeting having answers for those people who are coming in their masses to our offices every day. And as we speak, some of them are waiting there at Parliament for us to come out of this meeting. So I can't go there and say aquaculture sector is doing this and this and this, because our people are not in the aquaculture business yet. And then squid rights movement after aquaculture must be the last to be presented here to us. But aquaculture is dominating our agenda. Why we want, as Honorable Abraham is saying, want to know about the fishing rights of our people. Thank you.
Yes. So our agenda will be now
Number one, the update. Number two, small scale. Number three will be the Kucha as number three. Number four, wheat. Number five, marine protected, and the last one will be the aquaculture. So we agree. We shall let me find out from the DDG. With number one, with this update now, with this background that we are talking back on, how long do you think it will take so that it's time ourselves?
I would suggest that the presentation on the update and the small-scale fishery, because we combine those as one presentation. We'll try to also limit the presentation on the small-scale because it has already gone through the presentation. We'll keep it very short. I think the two will combine, and then we can deal with the Oka and Smith.
How long do you think?
The presentation will take 15 minutes, I think, for the two. I'm saying in our presentation, we'll present for 15 minutes, and then mainly probably then the questions and discussion will take more time.
Now ask the
DG
to take us through. Thank you.
Chairperson, it's now exactly 10 o'clock. So, 4 past 10, then you must call the presenter to order.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for your committee. On behalf of the Minister and the DG, then I'm making this presentation. On behalf of the department. What we intend to present, we have just circulated a red leaflet and in this leaflet we are outlining to you the background as we have also learned when we inherited the branch. Because then we applied our minds to try and understand what transpired during the long-term rights, fishing rights allocation. And the analysis gave us this particular perspective. If you look at the first column, that talks to specific clusters that were put together during the rights allocation. Realize that the first one is the egg in trawl, egg in shore, the prawn, the pelagic, and the second column will then be telling you the total number of applications that were received, which is the people who have applied for the right. Gives us a figure of 444. And you realize that the number of successful applicants there are 195. Unsuccessful applicants become 250. And the total number of appeals that were received were 286. And none of the appellants was successful. No, we think successful appellant was zero, and the final allocation was 218. Why am I giving you this background? I'm giving you this background so that we then have to realize that there is a variance of 250 applications. Meaning people who applied for the right, 250 who became unsuccessful. The issue is, what are they doing now? If you go down there's the very same column of unsuccessful applications on the dimethyl shark, the seaweed, the squid, you realize that the figures are even increasing.
The applications were 1,949. Unsuccessful applications were 1,442. So if you go down also on the other cluster, the Hague End Line, the applications were 4,256. Unsuccessful applicants, 3,834. So a combination of all these figures going down, it tells you the reality of what we are entering today. Where you realize that probably more than 60% of the applications were unsuccessful. And it's a situation that we inherit, it's a situation that we have to deal with. Because some of these applicants, they were involved in the fishing business. And if today they are no longer doing what they have been doing over the years, it in itself becomes a rhetoric problem. Now the next part of the discussion comes to the issue around interim relief. And the background to the interim relief is that there was a court order through Max von Wiese where a specific number, which was at about 1,000 historical fisher folk, they won the case against the department that they are entitled to some sort of livelihood from the department because they were not considered successful during the application. And the court order also indicated to the department that the department should put together a small-scale fishery policy. And that policy, it should accommodate the small-scale fisher folks. Or one way or another. And within the department, measures were put in place as to how would government then accommodate the 1,000 traditional fishers to harvest West Coast rock lobster, lionfish, netfish, and white mussels. In the process, developing the small-scale fishery policy. A target date was set, which is the 30th of August 2010, meaning this current year. And we worked hard from April after we had assumed the responsibility of the fisheries portfolio to try and meet this deadline. And in the process, if you look at history then, is that back then, in 2009, because this process started with the previous minister, Minister Van Schalkwyk, during his term in 2006, this was when the court order indicated that the department has to accommodate 1,000 traditional fishers. And in 2009, the previous minister, Sondika, also, because of other ongoing requests, the decision was made to accommodate an additional 527 fishermen, and in 2009 and 10, 180 tons of West Coast rock lobster was made available to the interim relief fishers. According to our analysis, this allocation, its market value is around 1,200, meaning the rent rate per month. It's more
per
or less
month per applicant.
In itself, it is more or less a food security package that should keep them going until the policy is approved and implemented. But you tend to realize that in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape, the presentation is a little bit different, because then you'd realize that the allocation is a little bit broad. It's lionfish, brown mussels, polychars, and East Coast rock lobster, only available in the Eastern Cape though. And not more than 1,200 exemptions are issued each year in the Eastern Cape, and not more than 6,000 are generally broadly issued. So the back limit for these resources to be harvested as per recreational fishing back limit, that is the operational procedure we put in place. But we tend to realize that the beneficiaries of the interim relief are continuously raising issues that this is not sufficient for them to make a living. We accept and we acknowledge that as a reality. But it's important that we also put on the table that the interim relief was agreed to, that it is an interim relief, as it is titled, until the small-scale policy is approved and implemented. That's why we want to take you through now the implementation of our thoughts around how the small-scale fisheries policy should be implemented. I don't know if Sarah can put up a presentation on that one, the small-scale fisheries policy. But as members have the presentation in the I will also be very brief and run to the specifics around the policy. The background is what I've alluded to, but more than that, we're looking at it that it needs to adequately address diversity within the small scale fisheries, also to contribute to poverty alleviation and food security, more importantly, also to contribute to the transformation and the development of the small scale fisheries sector to reflect the government priorities. You can quickly move to slide number 6. The lack of holistic approach to fisheries policy and management in the past is one of the issues that we tend to realize that it needs to be addressed. So it's a key issue that assists in shaping this policy. Also, another important factor is that the small-scale fishers have been unfairly disadvantaged by past in allocation of the marine resources, mainly for commercial and recreational purposes. And the Equality Court orders, I've already talked to that, it has compelled us to finalize this policy framework as soon as possible. How this was now implemented, there was a national task team that was put together to guide the department on how to go around the policy. And their input has largely contributed in developing this policy. The key important factors in slide 7 that shape the policy also is that state and the sustainability of the marine living resources is an important issue. Actually, it's an issue number one. Whatever we put in place, it should safeguard and guarantee the sustainability of the resources. The possible impact of the environment and climate change in as far as coastal communities are concerned is a very important issue. High levels of poverty, food insecurity within affected communities, and lack of gender equality in this sector is another very important issue. I will then directly take you to slide 11, which talks to the main pillars of this policy. That we are choosing to adopt a community-based approach to right allocation. By that we mean right then would then be allocated to the community over and above individual allocation. The co-management approach to managing small-scale fisheries sector, we will then invest a lot of resources, time and effort within the communities in teaching them about the resources for them to take ownership, also to, because if they would then be compelled to manage the resource, to protect the resource, because the resource will be seen to be beneficial to them. The multi-species approach is one other important consideration in allocating the rights. The developmental approach also to small-scale fishery sector, by that we are saying that government will then put together a developmental package, assistance package, in terms of the infrastructure, we're talking about the vessels or the boats, the processing facilities, the marketing facilities. Because more often than not, rights were allocated, but people, you tend to realize that people ended up being locked up to long-term contracts which were disfavoring them. They will harvest the resource, and then in the long term, you tend to realize that they are locked into processing contracts that are negatively beneficial, including the vessels also. You find that because they don't have access to resources, the vessel owners will also be putting premiums that are disadvantageous. So all these considerations are put in place to ensure that then this policy can only be successful if the state puts systems in place that will be protective to the resources, to ensure that the resources is protected, protect also the communities, to ensure that at the end of the day it becomes beneficial to them. So that is a very important principle. Slide 17, we talk people and communities. It's important for us as government to ensure that there are institutional arrangements in place. There's a lot of contestation around this issue as to what form of institutional arrangement needs to be put in place to safeguard the investment that the government is putting in place. Because much as we are saying the state is obliged to assist the communities, we should also then realize that the state has to put institutional arrangement in place that should safeguard that particular investment. We also, from the agriculture side, we know that the state has invested a lot of resources over the years. But we, at the end of the day, because of weak systems and institutional arrangements, vandalism takes place, theft takes place, all these things happen. The kind of the organizational setup that will be put in place should guarantee the protection of the assets that the state is putting in place. So at the moment, there hasn't been a solid agreement as to what kind of institutional arrangements are to be put in place. But within ourselves, we are thinking of institutional setups that will have a 50-50 shareholding between the state and the communities, so that its communities are not at liberty to vandalize and decide and take decisions that might take us back to where we are today. So there are considerations around that. Capacity building and decentralization of our services is another important area. We are already working on the decentralization, partial decentralization, because we cannot do it overnight. We are at the preamble immediately doing it now to ensure that we've got visible people on the ground who will also learn to understand the challenges that the communities are going through. Also, capacity building, very important that we teach communities about the resources on a continuous basis, afford opportunities for bazaaries to children of the beneficiaries, because it can only go as far as that the future generations should also feel the ownership and take charge of the management of these resources. But the reality is these resource management processes are quite scientific today. We can then take members of those communities to school, to universities, for them to be trained. Some of them will come and manage these resources within the government sector. And then the bond between the government and the community will be strengthened over time. That's what we believe in. Also, the issue of us working together with the police and the military on broadly co-managing and policing the water. That's very important. But in summary, the differentiation between offshore and inshore fisheries is very important. That the commercial sector will then be given the latitude to operate in the offshore fisheries, because it requires bigger vessels, it requires long-term investment in terms of, generally financial investment is quite high to operate in offshore fisheries. So that, we make a consideration to say, that should be left for commercial. And now small scale fisheries should be inshore, because then it's closer waters that doesn't require big investment. We are already in discussions with commercial industry just to share ideas with them around this notion. But that's a consideration that we have in taking the fisheries forward. So that's a summary, actually, of what the small-scale fisheries policy is all about. If there are any other issues that I would have left out, probably I can always refer to the document, or especially that I was sensitized that I should keep the presentation very short. Thank you.
Thank you, DDG. In short, that was the presentation.
Chair, does the DDG require another few minutes to finalize the presentation? Because there are a number of slides here that he has to go on.
Okay.
Slide 19, your desktop to supply chain from text to slide 19, desktop to supply chain from text to market. The policy proposed various mechanisms like
The policy proposes various mechanisms to assist small-scale fishing communities to add value to the marine living process. So we are looking at subsidy schemes for fish storage, skills, training in processing, packaging, and marketing, and basic business skills. That's very important. We are also looking at establishing locally based and owned marketing companies if it is possible. South African label of certification for fish products caused by small scale fishing communities in environmentally friendly manner. I'm saying this because there's been generally campaigns around the environmental activists on sensitizing the consumers about what fish products to consume as a way of trying to tackle or addressing the species that are threatened, as a way of discouraging the consumption and also probably suppressing the market price. So we also were looking at that as an avenue to say if products that are harvested by the small-scale fishers are branded and marketed as such, it can probably be having a better take in the market. Aspects of governance, monitoring and enforcement, we see co-management of fisheries within the context of shared management responsibilities between government and communities as the way to go. It's an important area. We have already started on it. The key thing is just to set up institutional structures and putting policies and procedures in place for that. Devolution of some management decisions to fishing communities is another important consideration. And provincial governments and municipalities to be included in areas where we cannot have coverage is also another aspect, because it's better for us to also utilize the other spheres of government who might be having rich advantage, especially municipalities. Because special dimensions in dealing with some of these things, they have offices already in place, they already have the muscle to deal with some of the issues. Typical example is the implementation of the aquaculture programs here, because then aquaculture development zones, if it is shared with municipalities and provincial government, they already have resources in terms of budget, which they can put in place to make sure that some of these programs are successful. We also look at the issues around self-regulating role for small-scale fishing communities. Very important to this is that once they know that zones have been identified and they've been allocated, some of them, because the success of this will depend on that. Where we will have to zone some of the areas that are specific to small-scale fisheries. And then they will have to also be vigilant in protecting their zones. Because whenever poaching takes place, it means it is a reduced resource for them. Then they will have to be also vigilant in safeguarding the resource that is allocated to them. Slide 21, that talks to learning, information, and sustainability. We are seeing a wide range of skills development training on all aspects of managing and using marine living resources. It's an important area. We are already working on this part, where packages will, even this training should also be done in vernacular language. It's a very important area, so that people really understand. We will have to explore and expand our capacity in providing training in vernacular languages that are prevalent to the community. Also, identifying community members, because our thinking is that the fishery development officers have to come from the community. And once they come from the community, they can better explain to us the challenges that the communities are facing. And it is better than being in a position to put together these developmental strategies that are relevant to the problem. We acknowledge that we may not better understand the community. And regular policy review and evaluation will emanate from that feedback. And the technical and advisory support services, including the kind of surveys that we'll be doing on the ground, we have already taken a consideration to run an independent survey around the Eastern Cape and KZN, so that we can then review, check, to satisfy ourselves, because there has been a continuous contestation on our GAC's allocation for those areas. So it's important that we run an independent survey that will then be done by an independent agency, not by our scientists, so that the broader communities can also find confidence on the information that we provide. So that when the TAC is allocated, then everybody will have confidence that what we put on the table as data, it is done by an independent organization, and everybody can adhere to the allocation. Because our fear is that when the total allocation is put on the table, and the communities do not agree with it, and they feel that we are giving them less than what they are entitled to, it becomes a problem for us to stop poaching. So we are looking at that as another avenue. And management mechanisms and instruments, looking to slide 23, and the issues around the right to fish. We are saying under the new policy, the right to fish will be held by the small-scale fishing community. And policy sets out how right holding will work. If you look at that diagram on the left of the same slide, it tells you that the small-scale fishing communities, which is of identified small-scale fishers, apply to the minister for recognition. And once that recognition has been granted, the small-scale fishing community sets up a community-based legal entity and draws up a list of members that are entitled to fish. Some of the comments that come through also seems to be citing that actually the government should play an important role in setting up those entities than to leave it to the communities to set it up. And then lastly, it says community-based legal entity submits the list of the application of the right to fish to the minister. So it means once the members are identified and they've been confirmed, then the rights will be allocated to the community and all other processes that have already talked in terms of the institutional arrangement that we put in place will become a working mechanism from the day of allocation, in ensuring that the support mechanism in place in terms of the harvesting, in terms of the processing, and in dealing with the enforcement issue. So that's how it is envisaged. I've already touched on the issues around the institutional arrangement, that there's a multi-tiered organizational model that has been envisaged, where there will be a consultative advisory forum at the national level, a small-scale fishing sector working group, and also community structures on the ground. I've already talked to issues of community legal entities and co-management committees. Of importance there is the division of roles and responsibilities. We are saying the department will be responsible for policy development, screening of the fishing rights applicants, also coordinating the application processes, issuing the rights and permits, lastly, compliance and enforcement. So that's more of the role of the regulator. And if you look at the community-based legal entities, they will be representing the interest of identified small-scale fishers, also compiling the list of the members who may fish, and also coordinate activities associated with the harvesting and the managing of the resources, ensuring compliance with conditions of fishing rights amongst members. So much as we at the departmental level will be dealing with compliance issues, also at the level of community-based legal entities, there will be also another level of compliance on the aspect of self-regulation that will also be taking place. Now, at the lowest level, which is the co-management structure, share management responsibility for small-scale fishers at the local level in accordance with the co-management agreement will also be dealt with. This is the vigilance of the fishers themselves, largely, because they are the ones who will be going to see. By and large, they will be in a position to see who is doing what illegal activity. We expect them also to be vigilant, because whenever someone is taking a fish that is entitled to them, the loss is for them. So if they cooperate with that, they are the ones on the losing end. So we expect them also to be quite active in protecting what is allocated. Now, in talking to our approach to allocation, which is slide 27, important issues of consideration here is that transformation and redress of the past injustices of the sector will be addressed. So of that list of the unsuccessful applicants, if you remember the first presentation I made on that red leaflet, it tells you that for those unsuccessful applicants, there would be consideration as to how redress then would be taken forward. Fundamental human rights that were highlighted in the equality course, and also interest of women, disabled, child-headed households, because you tend to realize that women over, oh, we always even talk of fishermen. That's why we're feeling now we are going the route of fisher folks, because you tend to realize that women have been disadvantaged over a period of time, and there will be consideration to see how this redress will be taken forth. Multi-species approach is another issue. Slide 28. The only way also to address some of the problems is to look at how we will avail the basket of species for consideration. But it will be based on the availability of the resources, the extent to which the resources can be sustainably exploited. All these key issues are important. Potential market value of the resource is also another important issue, and the nature and extent of the fishing area. Where appropriate, new species will also be made available. If I take you through to slide 30, we are saying that the duration of the right will depend on, especially for the remaining long-term right allocation period, depending on the species. That's one fact. Because the rights have already been allocated for a period of time. That becomes a determining factor, but there has to be intensive discussion around that. I think also this is an area that also needs a consideration for the minute. We are also saying appeals will be taken through to the minister where affected decisions are taken by a delegated official in terms of the Marine Living Resources Act. And the small-scale fishers may also appeal, because there are possibilities that even at the community level, there are possibilities for conflict. So the appeals will also be considered at that level. And we are anticipating that there should be a conflict resolution mechanism to be put in place between members of, within the small-scale fishing community through agreed internal conflict resolution mechanism. And internal conflicts are not also appealable to the minister. In this particular case, it's an issue where we are saying that some of the decisions need to be developed to devolve to a community level, to be dealt at that level. Because if it, that's a complexity around the community right allocation, just as the individual right allocation, that some of the countries will need to resolve at the community level. In terms of the current right holders, we are saying that fishers granted long-term fishing rights in terms of the long-term right allocation process and who meet the criteria for small scale fishers may retain their rights for the duration of the long-term period. And when the current rights expire, fishers may be incorporated under this policy provided that they meet the criteria. Alternatively, those who meet the criteria may even choose to immediately be accommodated under this policy. And what is not covered in this policy? It is the type of community-based legal entity. I've already indicated that it is under discussion. The implementation plan, we seem to have a perspective of how it will be done. We are already working on the plan and the operational procedures and guidelines. We are also working on developing. We anticipate specific challenges around enforcement and compliance, but we are already working on plans on how this can be done. The capacity to support fishers, meaning the budget, to be in a position to provide the type of support that is required. Also, as a department, we will then have to put structures in place to manage and support communities on the ground. So there has to be capacity building within the department. Issues around the selection criteria to support the community. I hope I'm still within the time of the presentation.
And the past injury time.
Okay.
And on extra time.
Extra time. Okay.
Score a goal now.
Okay. I'm confident that I've covered all the issues that are very important. I can then quickly then move straight to the way forward, which is already we have made this presentation to MedLink on the 4th of November, and we have received input from both labor and business in terms of the attitude to fight this policy. And we are also in the process now of consolidating all the comments that have been received to incorporate these comments into the draft policy. So it means after the comments have been consolidated, we might have a different version of the document for the minister to get even the statement forward through the process. As part of the background, Minister, we've already gone through the presentation of the interim relief and the small-scale fishery policy, including the background around the long-term fishing rights allocation process and the statistics that we have. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you,
DPG.
Yeah. The time now is 10:40. We are going to welcome the minister, who it's very important to come and leave the cabinet meeting to come and join us. Thank you, Minister. So here is the presentation. We now looking for questions. Tete Sobekulu, Mama Elizabeth Pidusa, Mama Paliso, Mr. DeJoy, and Honorable Akram, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. Firstly, I have a concern when the DDG was mentioning the proposed zoning of area for this small scale fishery. I was just talking to you that when these people consulted when this proposal or proposed, or it's just a matter of the minister's office that they viewed this to be a better way of helping this small fishery. In fact, the concern is around the fact that historically in South Africa, I may make a relevance, although it might not be relevant. I might make a relevance of the taxi industry where taxis were giving zones to operate, which has given rise to these taxi wars that I had. Are these people not going to be part of those battles for the area that is the zone for them to operate on? So I think that's my concern. And Chairperson Kuru, I would as well like to be more enlightened on the onshore and offshore issue. My understanding was that if this small scale fisheries sort of given the opportunity of fishing along the bank of the ocean, as you said, are they not disadvantaged in a way that if they were maybe given an allowance of saying they could go as far as they can in order to have it more for market, rather than saying they must be on a prescribed area to operate on those. In my understanding, the more you go deeper, it's where one has a better opportunity than advantage of getting more harvest. I think those are the two at the moment. Maybe. Thank you.
Thank you, Ingo, Mama Pizusa. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, TPG. The offshore and the inshore already has been asked. It was one of my questions. And the other one is the successful applicant and the unsuccessful applicant. My question is the unsuccessful applicant will have another opportunity to apply, or once they get their unsuccessful, that is finished. That is my question. And the third one, TPG, on everything you said, you are working on the policy, you are working on the policy. Like on slide 21 and 31, and it must not working on that for long. If maybe you have a country that we are still putting this together, but we hope on this time, maybe things will be okay, things will be in place. Things will be waiting, number one. I think I would be satisfied if you mentioned that. Thank you.
Mama Paliso. Thank you, Chairperson.
PPP, the first one is the community clarity, community-based allocation, and the community-based right holding. Are we talking about cooperatives here? Because to my experience, community EDPRO and community projects have stayed over the years, over the 60 years we are involved. So I just want to hear, is it organized cooperative? That's the clarity question. Secondly, the screening system, according to this unsuccessful applicant. Was the screening done by the department? Were there organized community groups involved in the screening process? And what was the criteria for the screening? And what is the future criteria also for the screening process? What I'm looking for in this question is, when I'm talking about the screening process, is are we screening the history of the applicant, the history in the kingdom? The last question for now, is this our progress since we have took over, or since the proclamation of labor? Is this how far we have come? This high number of unsuccessful applicants is what the staff inherited. Just for information, what were the reasons for so much high a number of unsuccessful? That the DOI?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I have quite a number, but I'll be very quick around these, so maybe you should make notes. I'll kick off where you actually finished. On this page, I've calculated quickly. The first lot is 49%. The second lot is 36%. That is now the final allocations to the applications. The second is 22%. The third one is 22%. Second last is 57%, and then the last one, line fish, is 49%, which is indicative of a problem of scarce resource and a lot of people chasing it. That is a real challenge for us. I think it is. I would like to have some comments on that. Just to kick off. Then the important questions for me are the following. On what studies previously done were the policy based? Did we just write the policy, or did we have an idea on what we can do it? The second is how to accommodate the comments after the public comments and participation, because I know the process is now on, and how we going to, what is the process to be followed, and then the time frame. We've got to internalize that and come up with a final policy. But I can see a problem arising around interacting with the people, because I've been following the papers, and there's quite a number of nasty comments and so forth. So there's a lot of whipped up emotion I can follow. So this is an important part of it. And then I can see that we'll have a lot of capital and manpower will be needed. And obviously you need to have work on the time frame here, because the minister will have to. I don't know, that it can't be I don't think it will be the next budget, but possibly it will be stretched over a couple of years. Then I've got the other one is very interesting question for me is why community rights and not individual rights? There must be a policy behind this, because the individual rights and the policy rights, the whole community involvement thing here is very interesting. So if you could allude to that. Then I've got the following three questions I've got together. It deals with the protection and sustainability. How would that be determined and done? because it's unclear in the light of things that we know. Then the other one is, I see a problem that you said that community members would become government officials. Now, I understand the training and the involvement of government, but I can also see that this person, coming from the community, then being put into a monitoring and enforcement environment, would be in a very difficult position to go against its own community around about this. So it could be a different. You're all intelligent people. I don't have to elaborate on that. And the other one is this compliance enforcement would only be by this person, or so how would we do it? Who will do it, and where would it be done? How will we operate this? That is something that we have to think about. And then I'm done with this one. This one, okay, disaster relief. That was quite interesting. I understand droughts and fire on land, but I would like to see an example of a disaster at sea. I mean, if a boat sinks, it's a boat that sinks. But it's not a storm or disaster. Just give me an idea of what you have in mind with the disaster relief. The retirement, there's a lot of uncertainty around when somebody is fishing and how will they retire, how can they build into the system some sustainability when they're too old to work. It's a very physical work. It's not work that you can say I'm desk bound and I can carry on after a certain age. That is a concern for me. And then the independent organization that was spoken about to help tell the community that this is the allotment that can be given. How would this independent organization be established? Because I can see that the department has a lot of scientists, and the department has a lot of resources to be able to give input, but if it's going to be an independent organization, it does mean that the department is not seen as independent, which it shouldn't be. It should be independent, actually, according to its mandate. So how would that other independent organization be established? And then the last question would be on the challenges. I would say that on the challenges, page 1734, where are we now? Yeah. There's the challenges, there's four of them, but I think there's two missing. I think to determine the sustainability would be a very important challenge. How do we determine that? I mean, the question came up in a previous meeting, on what are we going to base this? So the determination of sustainability is important, and then the other one I see is the conflict resolution, because obviously here is going to be a lot of conflict. The starting point was this, is the percentages. We have now to introduce a new base of resource. We have to verify it, and then we have to sign it, the rights. There's the first already, the first conflict. And then after a while, we'll go back to these people and say, look, we've overfished, we've underestimated the resource, we've overestimated the resource. Then we will have another conflict. So that is a great challenge that we have. We know that we should be able, or it's the people or the country, to exploit its resources to the maximum that is sustainable. We all want that. But we can judge so easily. So that is just my comments and questions. Thank you.
Hello, Abraham.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to thank the DDG for the presentation. And I take it that a great deal of work has gone into what they have presented here today. And I don't think that it was an easy task. However, Chair, I want to start off firstly by saying that the Portfolio Committee should take a very careful look at this draft policy. And perhaps
perhaps even seek advice before it gives it its stamp of approval or proposes any changes to it. I think we will be failing our people if we don't take all aspects into account, that we are objective and not subjective. Chairperson, I would like the officials to know that sometimes when one is critical, the criticism is not intended to be negative. It is intended to see that we improve ourselves. Those of you who consider us to be your partners, then of course a partner's duty is to point out where we are going wrong. And I'm one of those people that believes that it is my duty, if I see something not right, through my limited capacity, I will be able to put it on the table. Now, Chairperson, this document here has inaccuracies. And I would like the department, when it produces a document, to go through it thoroughly, because this document comes from a State Department. It has the coat of arms of the Republic, the name of the department right at the top, and it is a source document for a person like myself that I could use at some stage or the other in future. Now, to point out the inaccuracies, they may sound minor, but if you allow one little inaccuracy to go past, tomorrow there'll be 10 and the day after 100. We cannot allow them. If you look at the Cluster A fisheries, if I put the successful applicants and the unsuccessful applicants together, I get 445. And you say that 444 applications were received. Now, it may be an inaccuracy of one, but it's an inaccuracy, as far as I'm concerned, unless you have a good explanation. If you look at Cluster B fisheries, 1442 and 499 gives me 1941 and not 1949. A miss is as good as a mile. Remarkably, where larger figures are involved, 3834 in Cluster C and 422, it does work out to 4256. So you get 100% for that. We come to the next one, 107 and 123. Gives me 230. And I'm told that there were a total number of 451 applicants. So I don't know whether the figures, percentages, worked out by Comrade De Toy, are in fact factual or not, based on these figures which don't gel. So all I'm asking the department, take my criticism. It is intended to see that any document that we produce must be one which is impeccable, that nobody can question the document's veracity. That's all I'm saying. Now, Chairperson, what I would like to know is that was it the Equality Court order that compelled the department to finalize a small fisher policy? Or was it something that the department had planned in any case? When you are finalizing a policy which has rights allocations, naturally, you need to do some research. You need to determine whether the resources, the secrets which are kept in the sea, what is the extent, what is the degree of the resources. That in finalizing a policy, you would be able to maintain a balance, a
as to what you can harvest vis-a-vis what you need to procreate and breed further. I would like to find out whether we have done sufficient research so that the policy that you want to finally adopt and implement would be a policy that is based on sound principles, that it would be sustainable. Because you see, Chairperson, the most dangerous thing that you can do to poor people is to create an expectation. And listen, guys, we're going to look after all of you. And one thing that worries me, and that's my next question, is where the DDG has stated that there will be redress for unsuccessful applicants. But he did not give details of the type of redress. Now, what I would like us to do, if you find it feasible, is that we should also be able to tell our people that, listen, there's only 10 fish, and we have 50 people wanting it. We cannot divide a little piece among all of you. But this is the plan B. And whether one has not looked at whether the resources that we have are resources that will, for a foreseeable future, be able to be exploited and give those people that we want to assist a sustainable income. You have mentioned the figure of 1,200 rand per month. That's more or less what we are giving our poor, our very poor mothers and fathers who contributed to this land, who brought children into this world, who assisted this country, 1,090 rand per month. And yet we spend 200 rand plus per day on inmates in a correctional facility. What a disjuncture. 6,000 rand per month for a guy that wronged society, and yet 1,200 rand for a family that wishes to sustain itself. What I'm asking is, Chairperson, whether the Fisheries Division has looked at other possibilities. If we cannot give the people everything that they want, and it is quite clear here that you must have gone through a process before you decided on the number of allocations that you made. So I am asking the department to look at this thing holistically, and not merely just from the fishing point of view. Whether there isn't something else that can be done to assist those communities, and I know our people are a proud people. Nobody wants to beg for something for nothing. People want to do something to earn it. And hence they've all applied for fishing permits. But if you don't have the resources, what are you going to do with these people? There must not be an expectation which we will not be able to fulfill. Then, Chair, with regard to the state putting in systems in place, for example, infrastructure. Now, you did not give us details of the sort of infrastructure. Yes, there were some sketchy things, like, for example, vessels and a couple of other things. But then, you know, you need to clearly spell out in your policy what sort of infrastructure are you going to provide. Because one of the fishermen must not think that, hell, I'm going to get a vessel in its mine, when your intention is that it's got to help a few people. I think that needs to be clearly spelled. In short, Chairperson, people must not be left under any illusion. We must not give people any illusionary hopes. We must be upfront
clear and honest to them, so that they know what the state can do, what the state can't do, and what the state can assist them in to do something else. That is my plea. The main pillars of the policy on page 6, you have here a number of, what I believe are sort of good intentions. As there must be a community-based approach to rights allocation, co-management approach to managing the small-scale fisheries, multi-species approach in allocating fishing rights to small-scale fishing communities. Again, Chairperson, you must unpack these things. What does it exactly mean? That ordinary person on the ground must understand what our intention is. We must not be able to sort of flabbergast them with, you know, beautiful wordings. There must be meat in this. It must mean something to that particular person. And for this round, Chairperson, I will conclude by just saying that we are a developmental state. And what worries me is that in 16 years, would I be correct to say that this is the first serious attempt to create a policy for small-scale fishers? I don't know the sector. And that's why I'm asking. That in 16 years, have successive governments in 16 years, we are in 16 years the fourth government, that those governments paid very little attention to creating something and putting it on the table so that the people of this country, the poor people, the poor fisher people of this country, would have some direction, will know what is in there for them and what is not in there for them. If it is so, Chairperson, then I say that we must all take co-responsibility for having neglected our people, and I would say even betrayed the poor fisher folks of our country. And that the attempt that we are now making must therefore take into account all the factors that I have mentioned. Again, I repeat in closing, the most dangerous thing you can do is to create an expectation amongst poor people and not deliver those expectations. This country cannot afford it. This government cannot afford it. We need to put our money where our mouth is.
Mr. Abraham?
Thank you, Jay.
Yeah. No, thank you for those questions. Will the department answer?
Thank you, sir. And thanks for the questions. And I particularly help you that much as I put a lot of pressure on the managers in this room, they tend to realize that the pressure that faces me is far wider and bigger. And it's good that they are in this meeting. I would probably then go through the questions in the order in which they came through. Some I will refer to the specific individuals where I need the final clarity on the issue. In terms of the question around the zoning, our anticipation of zoning is primarily based on a resource management plan. Because if you don't zone, even currently, we use zones to manage fisheries. In a sense that you can only better manage an area if there are clear demarcations that beyond this place, it is no longer small scale fisheries. So small scale fisheries are only operating within a particular plateau. And but also in between the area, if allocation X, say for instance a certain tonnage is allocated to a particular community, and you do not know, you are bound to have a problem when everybody cuts across the land. And if we are, and that is primarily based on the interest of the resource itself, that it has to be managed sustainably. So that's where the zoning approach comes from. And in terms of onshore and offshore, in reality, I've said this, that to operate in the high seas, you need much more capital investment. And it becomes a little bit expensive in terms of running costs to operate. As far as when someone has to be in the sea for 30 days, diesel costs and all operational costs involved, a small-scale fishery cannot operate. That's why we were making that particular differentiation. To say, yes, you harvest more, but your costs are also extremely high, including the management cost. Over and above that, also the technology to fish. So there are other complex issues that come with it. And it is on those intricate bases that the decision was made. But over and above it all, even with the current fisheries, you tend to realize that there's more orientation in that particular direction. The previous allocations were made on the basis of the consideration of the ability to invest and harvest optimally. Now, I want to also highlight this issue. We have a sense now of a number of rights holders who can be considered to be falling within this category, who are allocated rights, who have never collected the permit for the past 4 years. So there are these certain realities, and they raise reasons on the basis of the fact that they are saying they have no access to vessels, sometimes diesel costs. So with all this consideration, you tend to realize that when you make a decision, you must make it within the consideration of the realities and the facts on our table. The issue around the unsuccessful applicants, yes, I agree, there are many. And we are saying the criteria that was set then, to a certain extent, may have contributed. But in reality, as we inherit the branch, there's one thing to deal and try and reverse what was done, or to be realistic with what is on your table and find ways of dealing with it going forward. It is a complex, difficult decision, because all these processes are tied into a legal process that was endorsed to be, it was endorsed by government. And it is still the sealed process, and we are currently doing a day-to-day management of what is in this thing. And the certain reality then is that at the same time, we are dealing with a continuous request from the community to say, we want access to the resources. And secondly, much as we are policing the water, we tend to realize that you are dealing still again with the same communities who are forcefully trying to access the resources. And it comes back to one thing. You continuously then take people to jail on a continuous basis. Our budget now is beginning to skew towards
law enforcement.
And it is increasing continuously. And on the basis of these decisions and consideration, the small-scale fisheries policy becomes an option on the table to say we have to find a way of closing this matter. And with two considerations, of course. One part, we have to be realistic that this issue is generational because of the equality court that acknowledges the traditional fisheries. It's a generational issue. It has to be accommodated within a particular context. We can't run away from it. That's why we have interim relief beneficiaries that we have to accommodate. Now, because 2,500, am I correct? 1,500 interim relief beneficiaries are on our book. Another 2,400 is unsuccessful. Not that they don't qualify entirely, but because we cannot accommodate them within the limited resource base. If you try to accommodate them, that figure of 1,200 will go down to 300. Also, it creates a problem for policy, because the more you have people in the sea, the more you have a problem now of policy. So we are faced with a situation of juggling the decision, but at the same time trying to adhere to the pressures that are facing us. In terms of the target time, as to what is the target that we have in place, we were targeting ourselves that by the end of this financial year, we should have probably brought this policy to conclusion and then submitting implementation plans that are very clear on the budget requirements as to what needs to be done to implement the policy. But parallel to that process, it is the process of negotiating for space, which is actually now a very problematic area that the minister is supposed to handle and continuously handle through those processes. To say we have to engage now the big players because in within these discussions, the money that we spend in policing the water, if we reach some sort of agreement, some of this money can be diverted to development. It, on a continuous basis, it can then take a summer. Over and above it all, knowing very well that aquaculture is our long-term alternative livelihood program, we have to build it up over time. It cannot give us immediate results, much as we know that the small-scale fisheries policy, because of the limited resource, it can only accommodate us to a certain extent. Then we need to overlay it with aquaculture development programs and other alternative livelihood programs. That is actually the thing and the plan. Around the issue around community-based allocation, what we mean by that is that in respect to individual allocation, which actually tends to be giving us more problems, it is sometimes better an alternative to go the route of community allocation. Why? Because over and above the people who have been allocated now as individual right holders, there are other people who come to contest their right. To say such people, the people you have in the system are not the right people. So it is only the communities who can actually make the determination to say who is rightfully entitled over and above the other. It's a process that will require us in interacting with the community to get it right. Because it is another layer that seems to be creating this fight. It is for certainty that consider there's consideration around cooperatives, but if you should not only be limited to cooperatives. It should actually, we had a meeting with our legal aides here, who were looking at a possible supertized legal instrument that can be put in place that can probably close all the loops, because with cooperatives there are also loopholes that will come. They were proposing a 50-50 shareholding between the community and the government. That can give also government the right to dissolve an entity in a case where there are conflicts and the government runs on its behalf. Over and above it, for the government, because it's government investment, government has to oversee to ensure that all that infrastructure is used properly. Because again, the fear is that if you allow communities to create this on their own, it might become another version of the mafia group that might be run. So this process will have to be managed very closely. We acknowledge the history around the long-term rights allocation process, and we acknowledge that government policies around fisheries were based on the basis of that history. And ours is to try and implement the policy guidance that is given to us. And I should attest to it that a lot has been done thus far. If part and parcel of the brief of this meeting was for us to brief the committee on what that has been done thus far, broadly within the branch, we could have put a presentation in that regard. We have a lot of work that we are doing with the limited capacity that we have. I should indicate that we are even breaking the frontier in the manner in which we've been doing research and to try and adapt research to the needs of the people. Secondly, to try and put a mechanism in place in terms of community development, where we put up a structure to try and decentralize our services to the communities. And in answering that question as to how, what is our thinking around community members, those that will be identified. In this particular case, it is not for them to play a policy role, but more to play a community development role. By that, we are saying they become a source of information for the community within a context of extension officers, where you have people in the community who will then brief the community from time to time, because you tend to realize that also there's misinformation that is taking place in the community. Communities are misinformed, they are always given wrong information about what the government intentions. So if you have someone in the community who becomes the actual source of information, and also that individual becomes also a source of information for the government on issues that might be happening within the community, we assume that we will speedily resolve community conflict. And the issues around the studies, I should also attest to it that we had commissioned an independent company actually that worked with the department in putting together the draft policy. It had done some thorough desktop and research that informed the preliminary framework of the policy in terms of how to go about the community systems, the cooperatives. There was a lot of work or research work that was done. And that informed the national task team, including the consultation. And our intention also is to make sure that the consolidation of the input will then also be done by the private entity, so that there's no bias in taking into consideration the comments. The aspect of capital. Actually, it's true that lot of capital investment will need to go into the implementation of this policy. I've said that in terms of governance, manpower, in terms of the structures, we will have to make sure that we build capacity to implement the policy. We have not costed it as yet. In terms of the implementation, we have also not yet costed it, but we are in a process of doing that. Part of the implementation plan will go with the costing, so that we can table a research plan that can be taken through to tell Treasury to request money. But already the Minister has put up also a process in place to broadly look at the financial requirements of the department going forward. So all these processes are happening parallel. In terms of disaster relief, we also realize that the other arm, remember, of this policy is the aquaculture. Aquaculture, that's where actually disaster relief comes into play. Another second issue is there are cases where fishermen die at sea, or some people, so we don't seem to have systems to take care of them. And all these issues that will be covered under the disaster, we have not contextualized how it will look like, but we may need other supporting policies that will deal with these other specific issues. Because at the moment, we are dealing with these things ad hocly. They are coming to us ad hocly, and we have to find a way of accommodating those within this. And on the part of the independence of the survey, I was simply making reference to our current surveys around the Eastern Cape. I'm talking about the resource surveys. That at the moment, from certain quarters, we have realized that communities don't seem to agree with the TAC allocation, especially around it should be around Avalon. That in school nature, there's so much Avalon there. As far as they are concerned, they attempt that there's enough Avalon, we are giving them the list in terms of this case. And our researchers are saying, no, the resource is not sufficient. That's right. Now I'm saying to break this, because poaching can only stop if they believe the information that we tell them. That's why we have indicated that then we have taken a decision to commission an independent survey, because currently we have a long-term contract, because we are supported also by the university, which is the University of Cape Town. The expert of mathematics, because you can't have people, you can't count the fish like you are counting people in the sea. It is also, you have to use mathematical models. And in this country, there's only probably one or two crackheads. And we can't afford to have that person here. It's very expensive to have that person. He's in the university who runs those models for us. And we pay that person on a contract basis. So we have then decided to say, the best way to do it, let's get an independent person away from the process that we have now to run that particular survey, so that we can close this case once and for all of the contestation around the information that we put on the table. And also a very important input that the Minister is reminding me of is the debate also around who's responsible for the burial of the fisher boats. We have several cases. Some of that has been coming also from the members around the issues that were tabled of people who have died and staying in the mortuary for months, and nobody seems to be taking responsibility. Yet they've died in the sea. And there are those things that one or another we have to do. There are issues around inspection, where there are issues where you find that laborers were abused, some were killed. There's all sorts of allegations. Issues around the Department of Labor, we have to put mechanisms in place that assist us to deal with. But in reality, issues are very complex, and on a day-to-day basis, we are trying to manage and try to create sanity around the management of the sector. How do we determine the sustainability? The determination of sustainability is based on the THC. That's very important. That once the total allowable cash or effort has been determined, then we put a management process in place to say who gets allocated what. It goes back to that, the permit allocation. Because then, on the basis of the TAC, it takes into consideration the ability of the resource to reproduce itself. So that calculation is very important. That's where we get very worried, that if sometimes people go into a particular area and they find a fish, you will find that there is a fish that has been reserved for reproduction. Now, if you go and harvest that fish, then it means that the resource will be exploited. And then once it is exploited beyond a certain level, you have already killed its ability to recover. Now, I should also attest to the fact that at the moment, we have put together a recovery plan in place, and it is running over a period of years, where we limit the total allowable catch over a period, so that the resource, or in terms of specific sector, can recover itself. So for all that information, that's why we say we need to educate the community very well, so that they understand all these things that we have put in place. Now, aspects of conflict resolution at the community level, we anticipate that, yes, there would be situations of conflict. That's why we even, the policy is proposing that conflict resolution committees need to be set up at community level. But as to how those will shape up, it will go through the consultation process. It needs to be applied. And the comments that have come through, I think will by and large assist us to tighten those issues. Well, I should also indicate then, according to Honorable Abrams' views, to say it's important that we will have to carefully implement this policy. It's very important. But at the same time, there's so much pressure. And lastly, also, we need to indicate also that the expectation around the communities, I don't think by and large it is an expectation that has been created by government. It is as a result of many factors. I've indicated that some of the factors are based on situations where you tend to realize that some people may have had access before, now they don't have access. And over a period, whenever they get an opportunity and a chance, they take advantage of that. Whether it's the media, whether even now, you tend to realize that they're interacting a lot with the portfolio committee because they see it as another avenue. And on a continuous basis, it's the amount of pressure on us, that I should say. And you tend to realize on the basis of the responses. We have letters coming through from the minister, many letters coming from the DG, letters coming from the portfolio committee. So, all letters also coming from organized institutions of civil society. So in reality, that's what we're dealing with on a daily basis. And it's important that also there's that consideration on our part, that there's a realization that we are under immense pressure. It is very important that comes across. And I should also indicate that it is true that the Equality Court made a decision, and it made a determination on the 1,000 fisher folk who were deemed to be traditional fisher folk. And The organ of state, we are expected to implement the decision of the court. And lastly, the last comment around the details on the infrastructure. The infrastructure will be covered in the implementation plan. Because if we talk to the infrastructure in the policy, it will become problematic. But it is also important that we raise the issue that the infrastructure would not, or the support would not be given to individuals, but to community entities that will be set up. Because of the fact that if you give a small fisher for 1%, it is not viable. It is just not viable. So on that particular basis, that's why also we are going the route of community allocation. It also justifies why then government will have to put support. It also becomes an incentive for individuals to join into community entities, because the state cannot give support to individuals, but only to the organized set of individuals. I think that concludes the response of all the questions.
Thank you, DPT. I've noted the two hands, of which I assume that is the follow-up question. Follow-up. The dilemma I am seeing now is that we have got 20 minutes left before we adjourn, because we have a memorial service of one of our members who passed away today. The memorial service is today at 12:30. So meaning that we'll have to stop here at 12 for us to have the single lunch and then leave immediately. So with the 20 minutes, really, I don't think any justice can be done now. If there are two follow-up hands, it means then starting another item would be impossible. So I just want us to be at par with the reality that we are facing. Mama Pilusa Muswana, Dadi Abraham, and Dadi Joyce, in that order. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm covered in terms of the alternative plan. What the DPD has to tell the portfolio is about the time frame. We will seek out of this meeting. At the next portfolio committee meeting, we would like to see a program on the how are we going to reach this goal. We want the implementation time, because now it is very vague to us. That's why I asked the question of how far did we come from April to now. Given the threat of the species or the information of the scientists that there are no species, I'm not really convinced about that one, but I won't go into that now, because I'll come to the proposal I'm going to put on it. The first thing that I don't know, you always acknowledge that there is just one thing showing to the vulnerable groups as women and disabled people. It's because if you can also see, it is a man quiet. I don't even think they can transform themselves or the sector to accommodate women if there even are no women in the institutional arrangement. They will forget us. They will just talk about us by the way. It will not be anything. It will be a by the way thing. So, Chairperson, I would propose in all these processes, the provinces are not taking this process. we must bear in mind or keep in mind that provinces also inherited this new department, also having no capacity. The whole transformation of the sector, they are not taken on board. For that matter, that we will have to have not just NECLEC to give us a input on the draft policy. Because if we are just focused to NECLEC, we will again lose the boat. We rather have summits in every province. National must really convene in every coastal province summit for the last input on the policy. Because then you will have your local people with the real problems of the provinces. Municipalities will be there knowing that what is happening in their municipal area. So you will go real issues from the people on the ground. They will be there telling you that this is the direction to go into our province. This is because it's not a uniform thing, province by province. That is the first one. Because before we come to this is a policy, we table it with deep portfolio committee members, it's not enough. And also provinces will be able to invite their people on the dry land aquaculture fishing, on the freshwater water. They will know who are the people there in their provinces, the relevant people. Because it won't help us having summits with people who doesn't even know what is fishing. The independent company, I really do have a problem at PDC. Over the years, we were dependent on this independent company, and they didn't help us a lot. What they were doing, it was sourcing money out of the department, not helping the real problem. That's why we are sitting with this huge backlog of right allocation to the historically disadvantaged community. And I want to disagree with the individual rights. The individual rights is where the problems were created. That's why I was asking the cooperative question. Cooperative question of clarity of cooperative on terms of the community-based allocation. Individual rights, that is what had led this sector to mafia operation. I don't want to make long chapter because you questioned us now about the time. So I strongly believe in the provincial summit, there will come out more and more advice that will help to strengthen the policy so that we can close this gap once and for all. But what I'm not clear of is all these rights with this department or are these rights still with DEA? I'm not clear about that one. I'm not so sure. So, the last one is that, as I'm saying, that the other proposals I will leave for the summit because I believe we are going to move towards the summit urgently because it is a matter of urgency. What I also want to caution the department is that those people in the university, especially those years in the Western, they were involved in helping us with the research compilation of what species do we have in every province. And they saw millions out of this department saying that this is the information document. What happened to those documents? Why are they again sourcing money out of department saying that I've got this information, I will source for you information? And for that matter, it will bring us to Honorable Minister that we will look for bursaries for students to really go this direction and also help us out in this, and also the professional program of government. They will have to go and look at the professional program and look, do we not have students out there who are knowledgeable about this sector so that we can empower the youth to help us out so that we are not stuck with these old blow-by Ikhadakse people who are just forcing money out of us and helping us to take us nowhere. That's the proposals I will put on the table for now. The others I will really, really reserve to invite us for provincial summits and also to look at a program or a time frame for that, Honorable Minister. I know in your business, very busy schedule. I'm putting something on the table that is going to put pressure on the department. But we rather pressurize ourselves now so that we can put this thing behind us, knowing that provinces cannot point fingers and say, you moved alone without us, now you want us to help you out of the conflict resolution, but you didn't take us with. So I don't know whether, Minister, will it be possible, but I want you to make it possible for the provinces so that we can negotiate with the provinces so that you can help us to reach the real people who are really affected by this setup over the years. 16 years have done nothing, and we inherited this, and we inherited this animal. It's an animal that we inherited. Because the animal was made very impossible for our people. That's why scientists say that there are no species. Now that we want to empower our people, now the species are not there. It's now an argument of species. And I know that people will say to us, it's impossible that we cannot give, if you cannot give 4,000 people who apply for rights, their rights. But if you look at the country, and only 196 people were successful, it's a worrying factor. Because all those who were unsuccessful, to my knowledge and to my information, physical information, physical touch with the community. And the DCG is aware of that because we did invite him to Langwith. It was more than 1,000 people who were in that hall. And the rights holders were there, jumping up and down, talking to us. Very angry people. Who said, we don't understand why didn't we get the rights. The poverty you could have read yet on their faces. That these people are really hungry. They are not playing games. So I don't know. This is a disturbing information to coming to our attention, and we don't have the real detail about this. But this must be resolved. If the interim rights will help us just to calm down the situation for now, then really that right must be allocated to our people so that we can sort out the long-term plans and the long-term allocation of rights, Honorable Minister. I don't want to go long. I've just touched now some of the things because I'm lobbying now for provincial summit. Thank you. And we always don't direct to the question to the minister. We always go via the chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Also, I'm still on this. DDG, your answer is not convinced. I'm not convinced the way you answer. Because when I'm looking at this unsuccessful applicant, and you said, in reality, you cannot change as many as they are. Then it says here you must not write an unsuccessful applicant. You must rather write something so that these people, their names, we will take maybe half. Because when they see this, really they will be disappointed. They can even start to provide. This really, for me, it doesn't say much. And again, lastly, on page 10, slide 30, the last, the minister, sentence there. Can you please remove names the minister may. Rather put the minister shall or the minister will, because may, it can be may not. The minister may, the minister may not. Put the minister shall or the minister will. Do you see it?
Yeah. Are you through, Honorable Minister? The Judge Akram.
Chairperson, in the interest of time, yeah. I can be looking.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be very quick. It's not a question, it's just something to take note from the feedback. I think the finalisation, as I heard, like I was wrong, on the end of the year and the implementation thereafter quickly will be a problem. Because it's a concern, because there's got to be interaction with communities and it's going to be a longer process than. I believe you will have problems if you try to finalise it for the end of the year and then immediately in the new year try to implement. I think it's going to be a problem. Then if a group is a sole basis for rights, you could get a situation where people would be ganging up against individuals. That is a concern. You should keep that in mind with this. Now, I'm not sure whether the individual rights versus the group rights, which is the way to go. What my concern is that we don't have an expert opinion or two experts' opinions of opposite, so we can apply our minds. We need a legal expert opinion on these rights. We need to apply our minds, you and us, to different opinions given. It is a legal matter. Then the individual rights, it could be accommodated in co-ops, but you cannot force someone into a collective right, I think. There must be mutual benefit in this. So I want to give an example, the wine industry, where we have individual sellers, you know, private sellers and co-ops. So it is a question of, If you put a facility on the harbour with cooling facilities and that type of thing, but the guy goes out in his own boat and he does his own thing, you can't force him to be within a community decision. If the co-op with a management structure is the cooling and the cutting of the fish and the packing and then the marketing of it, that would be, I would consider that as a voluntary association with or getting part of being part of a co-op. So I think we must be very careful around this. Just maybe keep the door open for individual rights and people that can use part of the co-op, because what here will be the key factor is not going to be catching what you're going to catch. One guy will go out with a boat further. Maybe he more successfully buys a bigger boat, but it's still within your limits where he can catch. So this guy is advancing himself, but he's not going to afford the cooling facilities and the processing facilities and the marketing and the trucking and the distribution. But that is going to be key. Without cooling facilities, you can't do it. We know that. So I can see what your plan is with the co-ops and so forth, or the other entities. My concern is just that we should look at the difference between individual and group rights. I'm not saying group is wrong, I'm not saying only, whatever. It's just we need to look at it, get our opinions, apply our minds, and keep it all open. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I think most of the comments, the input now, were the proposals that are giving us the way forward. Anyway, thank you. Want to add something? Chairperson?
I just forgot to say that we will also have to look for education and awareness program for our disadvantaged community to educate them about the conservation and environmental issues and the awareness of the species and all that type of thing.
Thank you, Honorable Member. So, the minister is amongst us. I don't know, Minister, whether you do have 1 minute. Okay, thank you. In the light of time, I wish on behalf of the portfolio committee to thank the DGG, to thank the entire department, to thank the minister who made the sacrifice that shows that she's taking
the whole question of this department very seriously. We appreciate that. So the meeting was an eye-opener, although many questions were not answered, like the results that were reserved. But we are looking, I must say this, that we are looking forward to the proposal that has been put of the provincial summit, which I think we will be notified about it. We, on that short note, the meeting, thank you very much. The meeting has been, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.